So today we are reading from the glorious Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 9, which is entitled The Most Confidential Knowledge, the Raja Guyam. Raja Vidya, Raja Guyam. And it will be text 34, the very last verse. Am I speaking loud enough?
No.
Am I speaking loud enough?
No, yeah, okay, because he has a problem.
Okay, I'm asking him. You can tell him what I said. Manmana bhava mad bhakto.
Manmana bhava mad bhakto.
Madhyaji mam namaskuru.
Madhyaji mam namaskuru.
Mame vaishyasi yutvaivam.
Mame vaishyasi yutvaivam.
Atmanam matparayanaha.
Atmanam matparayanaha.
Word for word, please repeat after me. Matmanaha.
Matmanaha.
Always thinking of me.
Always thinking of me.
Bhava.
Bhava.
Become.
Become.
Mat.
Mat.
My.
My.
Bhaktaha.
Bhaktaha.
Devotee.
Devotees.
Mat.
Mat.
My.
My.
Yaji.
Yaji.
Worshipper.
Worshipper.
Mam.
Mam.
Unto me.
Unto me.
Namaskuru.
Namaskuru.
Offer obeisances.
Offer obeisances.
Mam.
Mam.
Unto me.
Unto me.
Eva.
Eva.
Completely.
Completely.
Ishyasi.
Ishyasi.
You will come.
You will come.
Yuktva.
Yuktva.
Being absorbed.
Being absorbed.
Evam.
Evam.
Thus.
Thus.
Atmanam.
Atmanam.
Your soul.
Your soul.
Matparayanaha.
Matparayanaha.
Devoted to me. Translation by Srila
Prabhupada.
Engage your mind always in thinking of me. Become my devotee. Offer obeisances to me and worship me. Being completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me. Please repeat after me. Engage your mind.
Engage your mind.
Always in thinking of me.
Always in thinking of me.
Become my devotee.
Become my devotee.
Offer obeisances to me.
Offer obeisances to me.
And worship me.
And worship me.
Being completely absorbed.
Being completely absorbed.
In me.
In me.
Surely you will come to me.
Surely you will come to me.
Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In this verse, it is clearly indicated that Krishna consciousness is the only means of being delivered from the clutches of this contaminated material world. Sometimes unscrupulous commentators distort the meaning of what is clearly stated here, that all devotional service should be offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Now, unscrupulous commentators, Srila Prabhupada means, Prabhupada doesn't always name the names, but that person, I think, was President Radhakrishnan, was the one. He is one of the ones, not only, he's not the only one. Others who try to say you worship the soul within Krishna, but not actually Krishna himself, you know. Unfortunately, unscrupulous commentators divert the mind of the reader to that which is not at all feasible. Such commentators do not know that there is no difference between Krishna's mind and Krishna. So they're trying to, because they're impersonalist, they think that Krishna's body is just a material form. Not knowing that the previous verse in the Gita where Krishna says, those who think that I appear in material form are just fools. This is my form. This is my real form. It's not something I manifested. It is actually the way I am. So they don't know him actually. Krishna is not an ordinary human being. He is absolute truth. His body, his mind, and he himself are one and absolute. It is stated in the Kurma Purana, as it is quoted by Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami in his Anubhasha comments of the Chaitanya Charitamrita 1:5:41-48, Deha Dehi Vidbhedho Yam Neshware Vidyate Kvachit. This means that there is no difference in Krishna, the Supreme Lord, between Himself and His body. Because people, they like to make this because they know there's a difference between our soul and our body. We are not our body. So they extrapolate and they think Krishna's not His body because they have this idea that that's the Supreme Absolute, that has no form. So therefore Krishna's form and His the soul of Krishna must be different. But Krishna is totally spiritual. There's no difference between His Atma and His body. It's all the same. Krishna is not His body. Krishna is His body. We are not our body. Krishna's body and Him are identical. Because it is not material, it is totally spiritual. Whereas our bodies are not spiritual. Right? Our bodies are subject to decay, isn't it? When you were 5 years old and you looked in the mirror, you didn't have this body. Right? But something changed, right? It's not the same. Something went wrong, right? We should not be smiling because the same thing is going to happen to us. It already did to me. So things are going to go wrong. That's the nature. It just deteriorates. That's entropy, right? The third law of thermodynamics, that things tend to degenerate from organized to disorganized. They're just all a fancy way of saying it all rots. It all just rots. So that the unfortunate position of the Mayavadi philosophers, the Advaitists, headed by Shankaracharya and others, they think that Krishna and His body are different. And ultimately it's all impersonal, that there's no personality. It's all void. It's all nirvishesha. Shunyavad. But because the commentators do not know this science of Krishna, they hide Krishna and divide His personality from His mind or from His body. Although this is sheer ignorance of the science of Krishna, some men make profit out of misleading people. That's because the Bhagavad Gita is a name brand product, right? The name brand product, so therefore people like to make their commentary, therefore they can be associated with a name brand product. Prabhupada said, I have no problem with these people's philosophy, just don't use the Bhagavad Gita to propagate the philosophy. Write your own book. Don't use Krishna's book. Only somebody who is Krishna's devotee, Krishna says in the fourth chapter of the Gita to Arjuna, because Bhaktosi me priyosi me, because you are my devotee, because you have love for me, I am explaining the Gita. I am explaining this to you because we have a relationship. So unless you are Krishna's bhakta, unless you have love for Krishna, you cannot explain who Krishna is. It's not possible. So these people who are writing comments about Bhagavad Gita, they're not devotees of Krishna. They're not His followers. So how they can say something? You have children?
Yeah.
You have children. So your children know everything about you, right? But strangers don't know anything about you because they're close. They have a relationship with you. So Arjuna has a very close relationship with Krishna. He is the cousin of Krishna. Of course, Shishupal was also Krishna's cousin. So was Dantavaka. They were also cousins, but they had a different relationship. You know. So just because being a cousin of Krishna was not... Also, Duryodhana was also a cousin of Krishna. You know, they all... But he was a special cousin of Krishna, all the Pandavas. Specifically, they were very great devotees, and Krishna didn't speak the Bhagavad Gita to the others. He spoke it to Arjuna because of their special relationship as Nara, Narayan, Rishi. All through the Mahabharata, they are spoken of as Nara, Narayan, Rishi. They're always together. Their leelas may be in diverse ways, but there's... So that's why he specifically spoke to Arjuna, because he's very intimate. The relationship is there. That's why Arjuna chose Krishna over Krishna's army because he appreciated Krishna so much. There are some turn off the phone, please. There are some who are demonic. They also think of Krishna, but enviously, just like King Kamsa, Krishna's uncle. Now, Krishna's uncle Kamsa, there's a special reason why, if you read in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, it explains why Kamsa was so demonic. Because actually, he's not the son of Ugrasena. What happened was that Ugrasena's wife was apparently very beautiful. And one asura, one demon, saw her. A rakshasa saw her. So he had the capacity to change his form. So he made his form identical to that of Ugrasena. And so when Ugrasena's wife saw him, she thought, oh, this is Ugrasena. So she embraced him. And the result of the embrace was Kamsa. So he's not actually the son of Ugrasena. He's the son of an asura. That's why he was immediately going to kill Devaki. And he did so many other bad things. Like imprison Ugrasena. He was also thinking of Krishna always. But he thought of Krishna as his enemy. He was always in anxiety, wondering when Krishna would come to kill him. That kind of thinking will not help us. One should be thinking of Krishna in devotional love. That is bhakti. One should cultivate knowledge of Krishna continuously. What is that favorable cultivation? It is to learn from a bona fide teacher. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we have several times explained that His body is not material, but is eternal, blissful knowledge. This kind of talk about Krishna will help one become a devotee. Understanding Krishna otherwise from the wrong source will prove fruitless. It's not... When we learn about something, the more detail that we know about the object, then we want to attain that object. You know, why do people they enter into the IT industry? Because they hear, oh, if I do this, then I'll get so much money, I'll have improvement of my life. So they do all the austerities required to get that. And then they find out that it's a high stress job, but they have more money, which they spend on their psychiatrist. You know, but that's okay. But the point being is that if you hear that some place is very nice, like you hear that Mayapur is a very nice place, and you tell your friends about it, then you show pictures, and they aspire, then they hear other people went there, and they also want to go. So the more knowledge you have of something, the more you want to, you're either attracted to it, or reject it, if it happens to be information about something that's bad. So the more we know about Krishna, that's how Rukmini, by hearing so many things, narrations about Krishna, even though she never met Krishna, just that so many rishis, so many sages would speak so nicely about Krishna, she developed an attraction, a very strong attraction, an overwhelming attraction to have Krishna as her husband. And she invited him to kidnap her from her wedding, on her wedding day. A little excitement on the wedding. It could be more than one kind of excitement. Not only car accidents can happen, you know. But she gets kidnapped. A whole battle, a whole war took place at her wedding. People, thousands of people were killed at her wedding. That was a good wedding. So, because what? She heard everything, so many different favorable things about Krishna. So she wanted Krishna more than anything. Even Lakshmi Devi. There was a discussion in Sri Rangam between Lord Chaitanya and Venkatabhatta. Venkatabhatta, who was an archaka there. He was must have been a Telugu Brahmin. So Lord Chaitanya was joking with him said, why? They're joking about Krishna and Vishnu, because Venkatabhatta is worshipping Vishnu and he's worshipping Krishna. So he asked the question, why Lakshmi Devi, why she, she's the chaste, known as the chaste wife of Narayan, why she's worshipping, doing so much austerity to be with Krishna? Why is that? Why she, if she's a wife of somebody else, now she wants to be with him? Kind of, you wouldn't be so thrilled if your wife did something like that, right? I'm maintaining her for so many years, now she's aspiring to be with another man. So Venkatabhatta explained, well, actually, there's no difference between Vishnu, Narayan, and Krishna. Like that, And then Lord Chaitanya said, yeah, it's true, she's a chaste wife, so it's no different. But though she aspired so much, she was not allowed to enter into the Rasa Leela. But she had heard so much that she wanted, yet she was denied entrance. Why she was denied entrance is another story. But the point being is just hearing about Krishna, hearing what his pastime, she wanted to be with him than her normal husband. Those are the same. One should therefore engage his mind in the eternal form, the primal form of Krishna, with conviction in his heart that Krishna is supreme. He should engage himself in worship. Krishna is supreme. In the Bhagavad Gita, which is a chapter of the Mahabharata, later in the next chapter, Arjuna explains, that previously Vyasadeva and Devala and various rishis have explained that you are supreme. Now you are telling it to me yourself. There's one section in the Mahabharata where Markandeya Rishi had arrived. He's the oldest man in the universe other than Lord Brahma, but he looked like only 25. And he came and he began telling histories, Puranas. And then Krishna came. And then he began to explain how one time, because he lives, for him seeing Pralaya, Mahapralaya is like a daily, for him happens all the time because he's a Chiranjiva. So one day he was, Mahapralaya came and he was swimming. Everything was destroyed. He was swimming and there was tamingle of fishes and huge crocodiles and sharks and everything was cloudy and no light. And, he was dodging the sharks and, dodging the dog. For a long, very long time, it was going on for millions, billions of years. It lasts the whole night of Lord Brahma. 4,320,000,000 years that night. But for him, it's not long, And anyway, he's there and he notices something is glowing, So he swims closer and he sees there's a banyan leaf. And on the top of the banyan leaf is a little baby. What's glowing is the baby. The baby is glowing. And the baby is sucking his toe. The baby is, they can do like that. They're very flexible. He got his toe in his mouth. And he's wondering, who is this baby? The next thing the baby goes, inhales, and then he's sucked inside the baby. And then he's inside the baby, and there's a whole, the water's all gone, and it's a whole universe, and a whole another universe, a whole new world. And he's like, people are there, and elephants, and he's like, he's wandering all over the place, trying to find the end of this world. And it's inside the stomach of the baby. And he becomes very frightened. He's frightened, what's happening? There seems to be no end to this world inside the stomach of the baby. And at that time, then Krishna breathed him back out. And now he's again floating in the water. And he was Krishna explained why he did that to him, then after explaining all of these things, then Markandeya Rishi pointed to this Janardana over here, he's that baby. Your cousin, he was that baby. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's what Arjuna meant, is that so many people told me this before, Now you are telling it to me yourself. Because Krishna just didn't say anything after Markandeya. Krishna didn't say yes, no. He's kind of just smiled, you know. He was just smiling. Didn't say anything. So then, you have to understand that this is the eternal form, you know, the primal form of Krishna. There are many avatars, you know, Narayan, Vishnu, you know, Das avatars, Manvantaras, Leela avatars, so many avatars. But in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Vyasadeva, he lists all these different types of avatars. You know, Lord Buddha, Kalki, so many different avatars. But then he says, Ete chamsha kalapumsha krishnastu bhagavan swayam indradi vyakulam lokam mridayanti yuge yuge. So all these other avatars, and you know, these are the amshas and kalas. Ete chamsha kalapumsham, that these amshas and kalas of the supreme pumsham, but krishnastu bhagavan swayam. Krishna, he is swayam bhagavan, he is original Bhagavan. And he appears when the enemies of Indra become more prominent, and he demolishes them. And in the Brahma Samhita, Lord Brahma, he explains that just as from one candle you can light many other candles, and they all have exactly the same potency. So there's no difference in potency between Vishnu and Ram, or Nrisimha and Krishna. But the exclusive position of the original candle cannot be denied, that there is the original candle who lights all the other candles, which are all of equal potency. So that original source, that original candle, is Krishna. Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. He is the primal form. The primal form. He's not an avatar. He is the source of all the avatars. There are hundreds of thousands of temples in India for the worship of Krishna, and devotional service is practiced there. When such practice is made, one has to offer obeisances to Krishna. When one walks in, you have to pay obeisances. One should lower his head before the deity and engage his mind, his body, his activities, everything. That will make one fully absorbed in Krishna without deviation. So, there are many forms of yoga. You know, Raja yoga, Ashtanga yoga, various kinds, Kriya yoga. But Bhakti yoga is the highest form of yoga, because one's whole life is dedicated. That's complete dhyana, complete, you know, everything is done with that one purpose. There's one purpose. So just in this case, so Krishna is telling Arjuna to do this. So Daivi Varnashram. He's going to be killing on behalf of Krishna. He's doing it simply to please Krishna, because he didn't want to do it. He didn't want to do anything. He just wanted to give up everything, go in the forest, give the kingdom to the other people. But no, Krishna convinced him. So now he is going to do everything simply to please Krishna, including killing the opposing party. That is the highest form of yoga, where everything, wherever one eats, wherever one does, thinking, everything, sleeping, even dreaming about Krishna, that is no higher form of yoga is possible than that. That's why Bhakti yoga is the highest, as is explained in the last verse of the sixth chapter. The last verse of the sixth chapter explains, where are you? There you are. Krishna explains that Yoginam api sarvesham madgatinantaratmana shadhavan bhajate yomam same yuktatamo mataha. So he's been explaining different yogis, different types of yogis. You know? He says before, a yogi is greater than an ascetic, greater than an empiricist, and greater than a fruitive worker. Therefore, Arjuna, in all circumstances, be a yogi. And of all yogis, the one with great faith, who always abides in me, thinks of me within himself, and renders transcendental loving service to me, He is the most intimately united with me in yoga and is the highest of all. That is my opinion. And Krishna being Yogeshwara, the supreme yogi, Parameshwara, he should know. Right? He knows. He knows who is the best yogi. So this is the highest form of yoga, Bhakti Yoga, where everything, what you live, you breathe, everything is completely absorbed. That's why the highest of all the Bhakti Yogis, the way of meditation, the way of service of the gopis was considered the highest, because everything that they did, there was complete meditation on Krishna. That is real samadhi. So it's like Arjuna. He's going to be, though he's on the battlefield, he will be in samadhi because he's going to be doing everything. He's going to be totally focused when he's shooting those arrows. But for who? For Krishna. That is samadhi. Doing everything. So that's why in this verse he says, engage your mind always in thinking of me. So if Mother Yashoda, she's cooking for Krishna, she's thinking of Krishna. Right? In the home, people have their altar. So when they're cooking, they're thinking, I'm cooking this for Krishna. I'm at the store, I'm buying this for Krishna. Right? My wife, she's made 30 outfits for Goni Thai since she's been in the hospital. So she's thinking, what kind of cloth we have to get, how am I going to sew it, is it match like this? So she's just always thinking. So in our day-to-day, you don't have to go like live in the forest and do anything special. In your day-to-day life, you just sanctify it by making Krishna the center. That is the perfection of yoga. Not that you have to go, press your nose, on top. It's a mystic yoga factory, mystic yoga. You don't have to press your nose and stand on your head. You just have to meditate on serving the deity, serving Krishna. This will make one fully absorbed in Krishna without deviation. This will help one transfer to Krishna Loka. One should not be deviated by unscrupulous commentators. If one is not an unscrupulous commentator, means someone who is not recognized as a devotee in the Guru Parampara. So there are four paramparas. One, coming from Lord Shiva, that is called the Rudra Sampradaya. Vishnu Swami was in that Sampradaya, also Vallabhacharya. So very well, specifically in Gujarat, Rajasthan, there are many, like Nathdwar, that's the Rudra Sampradaya. And then there is from Lakshmi Devi, the Sri Sampradaya is very prominent in South India, Ramanujacharya. Then there is the Kumara Sampradaya. The big acharya there was Nimbarkacharya. They're very prominent in Vrindavan. But Nimbarkacharya was from deep South India, near Kenny Valley. That was the area he was from. And then, of course, then there's the Brahma Sampradaya, of whom there was Madhvacharya, and also we are the Gaudiya Sampradaya, Brahma Gaudiya Sampradaya. We are in that Sampradaya. So you hear from persons in the authentic Sampradaya, then you will get the real message. Just like, there may be a hole in the wall, or there may be a, Papa gives the example of a post box. If you go into the government sanctioned post box and you put your letter in, it will reach the destination. But if you just put some box there and put a hole in it and you stick a letter in, nothing will happen. You will not go anywhere, It'll just go into the box and it'll stay there. Of course, in India, putting a letter into the box might not work either. But in other countries, it does work. I've never tried it in India. I don't know if what happens. One must engage in one of the nine different processes of devotional service, beginning with hearing and chanting about Krishna, Shravanam Kirtanam, about Krishna. Pure devotional service is the highest achievement of human society. It is the highest achievement of human society. MTV is not a high achievement of human society. is not high. Who are the most famous people of the world? Well, people will think, remember Bill Gates 100 years from now? No. But Jesus Christ, he's famous. Muhammad, he's famous. The saints, they're all famous. Thousands of years later. But, the, you know, as it's described in the ninth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, these about these kings, you know, after some time they just become a name on a list of kings and everything else is forgotten. As long as one is remembered, one's fame is there and one can flourish in Swarga. But once you get forgotten, that's it, you have to fall back down. But the saints, those who are in serving the Lord, they're always, they're never forgotten. They're never forgotten. One saintly person like Jesus Christ, just his sacrifice, and he's, you know, billion Christians are there. Whether they are following him, that's another story. Because Srila Prabhupada often said that if one simply follows the precepts of Christ, then one will get the destination. But he also said he had not met many Christians, even after having met bishops and cardinals. So there was a couple he appreciated in Australia, because the movement was being suppressed by the government. And it was the bishop of Eastern Australia who wrote a letter to the newspaper, says that to stop harassing the servants of God. Because they were Franciscans. They were followers of St. Francis of Assisi. They're all vegetarians, you know. And they became very close friends with Srila Prabhupada. He went to their monastery, gave lectures there. And they liked him. Then they asked Srila Prabhupada, after hearing the question, what is your opinion of St. Francis? I don't know. I never, tell me about him. But he described him. In fact, I got the movie. They made a movie of the same. They made a couple of movies. So one very beautiful movie called Brother, Son, Sister, Moon. He would address the birds as his friends, as his, my sister, the moon, my brother, the sun. Like that. So Prabhupada said, he is a pure devotee. He's a pure devotee of God. In fact, the one who told him about this movie, he had blooped. He had left Krishna consciousness. After seeing the movie, he shaved up and joined the temple again. Such an inspiring movie. So that's who is, so that is a real achievement of human society. Huh? That is to be a real human. A human, it's not that today is different. We live in the computer age, therefore the modern age, therefore we have to do things different. That was that's old fashioned believing in God. This is old fashioned, not for today. You know, not today. We have internet. You know, we have the internet. We have, you know, we have so many different things that we didn't have before. But the problems of today are the same as the problems that they were 10,000 years ago. No? And it's the, you know, there's eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. That's the same problem. You know, everybody here works, right? Why? Because if you don't work, you get a pain right there.
Eating.
That's called hunger. Everything is based upon that hunger. We don't have to keep filling that hole, right? Keep filling that hole. One time, I was a septic. You know, everybody knows what a septic tank is. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows what a septic tank is, right? So ours got clogged up. So I had to call somebody, and he took off the cover of the septic tank, and he pointed and says, "This is where all your groceries go. All that money you spend, it just goes in that hole." That's what we work. We're working so hard to fill that, and it just goes in that hole. What a waste, right? How much money we spend for that. So it's eating, sleeping. We have, you know, all these things. That's what animals do. Animals do these things. So if that our whole goal of life is just eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, which is the problem today, which is the problem yesterday, which will be the problem tomorrow, then what's the difference between us and some animal? There's no difference. We're just filling that hole. Our whole life is just spent filling that hole. It's just a tube, you know. Mothers know that when they have to change the diaper, that it goes in one end and at the other end it's just a big mess. It's just a big mess. We're just like big worms. It's a hole. It's a tube. So if our whole life is just spent on this, it's not human society. It's not an achievement of human society. That's just animal life. It's just animal life. The real problem, that's what animals are. The real problem is to escape from this. The real problem is birth, death, old age, and disease. That is the problem many millions of years ago. It is the problem today, and it is the problem tomorrow. Forget about all this, oh, this is modern age. The word modern simply means non-Vedic. It's dealing with ephemeral things. Because even Manu Smita talks about modern. We'll talk about Lokakiya. Modern thing. This is just simply nonsense. What is modern today will not be modern tomorrow. It's changing. That is if you read in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that is the definition for unreal. Those who are knowers of the truth, they have determined that what is unreal has no duration, and what is real has no cessation. So modern means unreal, because it's not modern tomorrow. And what was modern yesterday is not modern today. It's just continuously changing. That is, by definition, illusion, unreal. But the soul is eternal. So we have to deal with, if we want to go to the eternal, then we, as Krishna says, and I think it's in the 15th chapter, then we have to see with the vision of eternity, not with this temporary vision. We have to engage, if we want to go to the eternal destination, where everything is on the eternal principle, we have to also adopt eternal principles. Otherwise it's not going to work. If we're just in, we have to be, can't be an illusion, in other words, by getting into all these temporary things. So we have to focus on eternality, which is our very nature. It's eternal. So this idea that, oh, today in modern life, Cicero, in his orations, there's a one famous line, O mores, O tempores. He is complaining 2,000 years ago, oh, the times, oh, the morality, that it's getting worse. He's complaining how things, in those days, he's lamenting how things are bad. You know, we always think about the good old days. In the good old days, they were complaining also. They were complaining then, because it wasn't so good. And it's just, you know, it's just the same story, just hashed over and over again. What do they do on the internet? They go to, you know, shadi.com, because they're... Or that's if they want to get married. Otherwise, they go to, you know, XXX.com. You know, that's what. Because this is again, mating, you know, defending. They use Al Qaeda uses the internet for warfare. They use it for defending. So they just use the internet just for the same thing. What do you use cell phone for? It's for business. They use this. So it's just an extension of eating. Mating, sleeping, and defending. So this idea that it's modern is a joke. It's just complete nonsense. Because it's modern. It's always been modern. And we've always had... And then those who accept the modern principles, they have to die and find out that death is eternal. It's an eternal principle. The 7th and 8th chapters of the Bhagavad Gita have explained pure devotional service to the Lord that is free from speculative knowledge. In other words, it's not guessing. That's the thing about other spiritual traditions. They're authentic, you know, like Christianity and Islam. They are authentic, but the message is according to the capacity of the audience, right? I mean, Jesus was not speaking to philosophers. He was speaking to very simple people, fishermen, shepherds. These are not Rajarshis, you know. So he could not give so much information, you know. Muhammad was speaking to camel herders, you know, people, you know, who, the people of the times. They could not give high philosophy. Whereas Arjuna, he's an Aryan. He knows the Vedas. He's a very learned person. He's a highly learned scholar. Krishna could give him the exact message. Because with the little bit, as Jesus says, I have much more to teach, but you cannot bear to hear it. And the little bit that he did teach, well, they nailed him to a cross because of that. They didn't like certain sections of society, did not appreciate what he had to say. Because the Jews had a history of killing their prophets. He was not the first one. They didn't like the message, you know. Like one very leading rabbi in Israel, a few years back, he made the comment publicly that the reason that the Holocaust took place, everybody knows what the Holocaust is? The Holocaust in the Second World War, millions. He says the reason the Holocaust took place was because you deserved it. You deserved it because you went against the laws of God. So therefore this happened. The secular Jews, they didn't appreciate that. They didn't appreciate being told that the Holocaust happened because of their own karma. Because they were sinful. They didn't like that. But he was telling the truth. So they did all kinds of, you know, they attacked him like anything because he told them the facts. They didn't appreciate it. When I first came back from, in 83, when I came back from India, we had a place in Lake Huntington. So this one rabbi would come to our school there because he told me how he was teaching Hebrew at the synagogue. And one day, he came and he said, I just resigned. And I told him, says, now I know why God allowed the Holocaust to happen. Says, because you all deserved it. Because they're so materialistic, very materialistic people. So the point is that in other scriptures, they give very vague information about God. It's very vague. There's some moral principles are there. God is mentioned as a creator, but then, you know, what did he do after he created things? You know, like, what did he do? Did he retire? Did he go on vacation? What happened? You don't know. I met some in the Delhi temple. Many Muslims come. I met Muslims from Afghanistan, from Iran, Turkey. So these two Turkish Muslims came. So we were having a discussion, and they said how they mentioned the subject. You know, no one has seen God. They said, no one has seen God. I said, well, maybe you haven't seen God, but doesn't mean nobody can see God. Of course you can see God, if God allows you to see God. And they said, because if you say that God can give you the power to see Him. Tesham svatata yuktanam bhajatim prittipurvakam dadami buddhi yogamta yenamamam upayantite. To those who worship me with great love and devotion, I give them the intelligence by which they can come to me. So, though we are tiny, tiny, infinitesimal beings, Krishna can give us knowledge of God. Krishna can allow us to see Him. When Dhruva Maharaj was only a tiny little boy, 5 years old boy. But when Vishnu appeared to him, he didn't know what to say. He didn't know what to do. He was just a little boy. But then Lord Vishnu took his conch shell, touched his head, and all of a sudden, he was like Shakespeare, you know, flowing over, you know, with his Uttama Shloka. He was, Krishna's known as Uttama Shloka, because the devotees just start overflowing with the most beautiful poetry. Because he just touched them in the head. Then, now he knew everything. Krishna can do that. So their idea is that God is limited, that they think God couldn't do that. But God can do that. Otherwise, He's not God. I got him in a paradox. if God is great, how come God can't make you see Him? You know, God can give you knowledge of Him. It was a trick my brother tried to play on me once. He said, "Can God create a stone so heavy that He can't lift it?" Right. paradox. If he's God, he should be able to make a stone so great that he can't lift. But if he can't lift it, how can he be God? Right? It's a paradox. So the answer is, if because you say no, then he's not God. And if you say yes, he's not God either. Right? But the answer is yes. Because one name for God is Brahma. So that means always expanding. It's always expanding. Or in mathematics, it's a monotonically increasing function. It always goes gets bigger. So at the moment he created the stone, he could not lift it. But the next moment he could. Because he's always expanding. He's never static. He's ecstatic. He's always getting bigger. So yes, at that moment he couldn't lift it, but the very next instant he could. So God can do that. He's able to reconcile all contradictions. All contradiction can be reconciled in Krishna. He spends all night with the girls, but he is the supreme brahmachari. As Bhishma said, he's a better brahmachari than me. He's a much better brahmachari than me. He does so many things, you know. He is greater than the greatest, but smaller than the smallest. Krishna can do that. That's why that there's one story in the Chaitanya Charitamrita about the Brahmin and the Muchi, right? The cobbler. That Narada Muni was walking or flying, floating, however he does, you know. I don't think he touches the ground. The devas, they don't touch the ground. They always 6 inches above. Because when Damayanti met the Lokapalas, they were not touching the ground. They were always 6 inches above the ground. So anyway, Narada Muni, he meets this Brahmin. And the Brahmin said, "Oh, you're Narada Muni? Nice to have your association, Sadhu Sangha, you know, on equal." He's basically thought he was equal to Narada Muni. He says, "So where are you going?" He says, "Oh, I'm going to Vaikuntha." He says, "Well, when you go there, maybe you can ask Narayan when I'm coming back. When will I have his darshan?" Right? So Narada Muni said, "Okay." Then, as he was going, he meets one shoemaker, a cobbler, who's dealing with very dirty, things, But he was very humble, and as soon as he saw Narada Muni, he offered him a place to sit, washed his feet, gave him something to drink, etc. And he was very kind and very hospitable to Narada Muni. He was very humble, and he was like this. And Narada Muni was appreciated. And in the course of the conversation, he said, "Where are you going?" And he said, "I'm going to Vaikuntha to see Lord Narayan." And the cobbler felt really bad. "I'm so degraded and so fallen. When I, I'll never see, please ask the Lord when I'll have his darshan." But then eventually Narada Muni went to Vaikuntha and he saw Lord Narayan, and Narayan, he knew immediately what the question was, and he said, "Will you tell the Brahmin that he will not have my darshan for crores of lifetimes? You tell the cobbler in this at the end of this life he'll see me, he'll come back home back to Godhead." And Narada Muni was curious, how is this possible? The Brahmin, he's so learned, he knows all the Vedas, he takes bath 3 times a day, does Sandhya Vandana, does Agnihotras, does everything, Whereas the cobbler, he's always dealing with the skin of animals and, touching people's feet and unclean profession, etc. And so Narayan said, "You will understand. You will understand because when you see them next time, they're going to ask you a question. They're going to ask you, what was I doing when you met me? So you tell them that when you met me, I was passing a camel through the eye of a needle." You tell them that. Then you will understand why I said what their destination will be. So Narada Muni goes back and he meets the Brahmin. And the Brahmin was so happy. He says, "So when am I going back to Godhead? Am I when going today? Am I going back today? Harimun said, "Well, actually, no. I know. On my birthday, right? I'm going back. No. Okay. New Year's Day. No. My Janmashtami. No. Sorry. But actually, Narayan said, you won't go back for at least crores and crores of lifetimes. You won't go back." The Brahmana was, what? How is it possible? I know so many Vedas, so many slokas, I've done so many yajnas, this, that, you know. That's impossible. How do I know that did you actually go see Narayan? What was he doing when you saw him? What was he doing? And Narayan said, well, when I saw Narayan, he was passing a camel through the eye of a needle. He says, what? He's like, I'm a pundit. I'm not a fool. I still need to believe this. I'm a pundit. How do I? You're not even, probably not even Narada Muni. You just maybe wonder, is Narada Muni lookalikes? You must look like Narada Muni, but you're not Narada Muni. So, get out of my way. Then he went, then Narada Muni, he got the idea. This person has no faith. He's completely arrogant. But then he went to the shoemaker. The shoemaker again was very hospitable, offered him a place, very humble, offered him a seat, etc. And in due course of conversation, he asked, what will happen? He said, well, the Lord said you will go back in this very lifetime. In this lifetime. And the shoemaker was so shocked. Me? How is it possible? Anyway, the mysteries of the Lord are so many, you know. Anyway, what was he doing? He immediately wanted to know. What activities was the Lord doing? And Narada Muni said, well, when I saw him, the Lord was passing a camel through the eye of a needle. And the camel said, Jai! You know, just see our Lord, he's so powerful. You know, he could do like that. And Narada Muni said, so what? You believe that? Do you believe that? You actually believe that? And the camel said, why shouldn't I believe that? He says, we're sitting under this banyan tree. You know, on this banyan tree there's so many seeds. He picked up a seed. Inside this seed, there's another banyan tree. And on that banyan tree, there's so many other seeds. And in those seeds, there's more banyan trees. So if the Lord can put so many thousands of banyan trees in this little seed, what's the problem of him passing a camel through the eye of the needle? There's no problem. There's no problem. So he has great faith. So his shraddha is what allowed him to go back to Godhead. Because he had complete faith in the Lord. Not like that Brahmin who is by his logic, in fact, because he's a pundit, by his own logic, he thought he could go back. So that is the highest achievement of human society, is to become human. Very good. To be a human, not to be living like an animal. But Srila Prabhupada explains that human society begins with Varnashram Dharma. That's human society. Otherwise, it's animal society. Because the whole objective of human society is to become God conscious. Free from speculation, mystic yoga and fruitive activities. Those who are not purely sanctified may be attracted to different features of the Lord, like the impersonal Brahma Jyoti and localized Paramatma. But a pure devotee directly takes to the service of the Supreme Lord. There is a beautiful poem about Krishna in which it is clearly stated that any person who is engaged in the worship of demigods is most unintelligent and cannot achieve at any time the supreme award of Krishna. The devotee in the beginning may sometimes fall from the standard. Now here's a very good point. The devotee in the beginning may sometimes fall from the standard, but still should be considered superior to all other philosophers and yogis. That's explained earlier in this chapter. Just like Ashwatthama. Now Ashwatthama, he knew who Krishna was. He was a devotee of Krishna. But Bhishma, even Dhritarashtra, he knew who Krishna was. They knew who Krishna was, after all. Dhritarashtra was the son of Vyasadeva. And he was Krishna's son. Vyasadeva is the incarnation of Krishna. They knew who Krishna was. So Ashwatthama knew who Krishna was. Yet, he, along with Krishna's uncle, Kritavarma, did the most abominable thing. They murdered the sons of Draupadi in their sleep, for which he was punished. But because he continued in his life of purification, of austerity, of Krishna consciousness, he continued in that lifestyle. He didn't give it up. He will be the next Vyasadeva in the next Dwarpa Yuga, in the next Mahayuga. He will be the next Vyasadeva because he did not give up his devotional service. Because the punishment lasted for 3,000 years, so he continued. Since 2,000 years, he's been continuing his devotional service, and he will be the next Vyasadeva. So he had some... So that in the beginning, they sometimes fall from the standard, but still he should be considered superior to all others. One who always engages in Krishna consciousness should be understood to be a perfectly saintly person. His accidental non-devotional activities will diminish. He'll remember. That's the whole point of the sixth chapter, is if you forget, if you get diverted, bring your mind back. Yes, the whole sixth chapter discusses what happens to the yogis who fall down. Because it happens. We fall down. But we should learn from Vishvamitra Muni. Right? Sometimes he gets a bad comparison between Haridas Thakur and Vishvamitra Muni. But we can learn from Vishvamitra Muni. He fell down with Urvashi. Right? But then he picked himself back up again. Then he fell down with Ramba differently. He cursed her and she burnt up into ashes. It's because of anger. And then he again, but then he picked himself back up again. And he fell down again. And then he picked himself back up again. And he fell down again. Then he picked himself back up again to the point that eventually he became the guru of Lord Ramachandra. Yeah, he became. He's the one who gave Lord Ram the celestial weapons. He's the one who arranged the marriage of Sita and Ram. So he may have had some fall down, but he did not give up. He picked himself back up again and continued until he achieved success. So if at first we don't succeed, try again until you do succeed. He is the perfect example. You know. So the non-devotional activities will diminish and he will soon be situated. Soon, of course, is according to Krishna's time. Soon is relative term. You know? So it could be very quickly. Or, of course, it depends upon us, how serious we are. But when we achieve perfection, it will just seem like a minute. Because the time factor is like that. Time, if you take a nap, it may seem like only a few minutes, but then 3 hours later, you missed your meeting, everything went by very long. Or you can sometimes take a very short nap and in a dream the whole Mahabharata can take place. You have that experience? Just a short period of time, but the whole Mahabharata or many Mahabharatas took place. So time is like that. It's very stretchable, shrinkable. Lord Brahma, his lifespan is 1 day is 1,000 Mahayugas. He has 360 such days in his year and 100 years in his life, a total of 311 trillion and 40 billion years. And that is the duration of one exhalation, inhalation of Mahavishnu. And the living entity goes from one universe to the next universe. So it's, in eternity, it's not very long. Not a very long time. The pure devotee has no actual chance to fall down because the Supreme Personality, the Supreme Godhead personally takes care of his pure devotees. Right? Ananyas chintayantomam yejana parupasite tesham yukta biyuktanam yoga kshema vahami aham. is I personally carry what they lack and I preserve what they have. Everybody knows that. Prabhupada told that story of, I think, Ajunacharya. Everybody knows that? So, Srila Prabhupada, in regards to that verse, how when this Acharya came to that verse, he's thinking, Bahami Aham, that I personally carry, that, nah, it can't be. Must be he sends somebody to do it, right? So he took his, and he scratched out, and he wrote something, and you know, then it was time for his midday sandhya. So he went down to the Ganga and took his bath. In the meantime, his wife was cooking, and these two boys came, one darkish color, one very white color. They came and they were carrying on these, like these long sticks with the pot, you know, big heavy weights, you know, heavy weights, and they brought, you know, all kinds of gold and jewels and ghee and all kinds of luxuries items, you know. And the wife is thinking, oh, where did this come from? Who sent this? And the boy said, well, Ajunacharya, he told us to bring this. He's the one who sent these things. And his wife said, oh, really? Where did this come? She said, anyway, you boys stay. I'm preparing lunch now, and then you can take some meals also. And they said, oh, no. We don't want to stay. Ajunacharya beat us so badly. And they turned around and had all these like marks on their backs. And the wife was, what? My husband did this? How can it be? He's never... No, we don't want to stay. They were very frightened, and they just ran off because he was so cruel. Right? So then, she's cooking, and then when the husband comes, he's wondering, where did all this stuff come from? And then his wife starts getting on his case, you know, like, why are you beating those boys? Those boys, such beautiful boys, you're beating them. He said, what boys? What are you talking about? What is this? You know, he doesn't know anything about this, you know? He says, oh, yeah, yes, these boys, they came. One very beautiful... bluish colored boy, one very beautiful white boy, colored boy. They came and had these all these beating marks on their body. They were carrying this stuff for you. He says, I didn't send anybody. Oh no, you did. You know, says, how you become so cruel? And then he was thinking, Vahami Aham. He says, then he realized that it was Krishna and Balaram, and you know that because his wife was pious, she saw them, but because I was so impious, I didn't see them. And the marks on their body was because he scratched out the verse. Then he went and he erased the scratch. Because Krishna personally carries, not somebody else. He personally carries. It's like he personally drove the chariot for Arjuna. He personally supplied the sari to Draupadi. Not somebody else. He personally supplied. He personally delivered his parents from the dungeon of Kamsa. He personally delivered Prahlad. He personally killed Vavana on the behalf of the Devas. He personally did it. Not somebody else. Therefore, the intelligent person should take directly to the process of Krishna consciousness and happily live in this material world. It's the only way to be happy in the material world. Because there's only two kinds of people who are happy in the material world. That is explained in the Uddhava Gita in the 11th canto. Those who are Mahabhagavats, and those who are the greatest fools. Only the complete idiots, I mean totally foolish persons can be happy in the material world, and pure devotees. Everybody else is unhappy. So the only way you can live happy in the material world is when you know you're in the process of leaving it. Because Krishna consciousness means you know you're in the process of leaving the material world. It's like when you're in the airport, going to your holiday destination, and you're dressed in your shorts, your Bermuda shorts. Everybody else, like in Canada, I was leaving Canada, it was winter time. It was winter time, so everybody else, Canadians, they have all these big coats on. But I'm going to India, so I have my dhoti on and everything. I didn't care what they're looking at me, I know where I'm going. And the ones who were going to Bermuda, or were going to the Bahamas, they had their shorts on. Everybody else, you know, it's it's 10 degrees below zero, but they have their Bahamas clothes on because they know where they're going. So similarly, you can be happy even though it's winter time outside because you know you're going to the hot place. That's how the only way you can be happy in the material world, because you can be happy in the material world because you know you're leaving it. In the process of leaving the material world, he will eventually receive the supreme award of Krishna. Thus end the Bhagavata purports to the 9th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavad Gita in the matter of the most confidential knowledge. So specifically, so Srila Prabhupada discussing a lot about, you know, worshipping Krishna, how to, you know, etc. So the specifically in Kali Yuga, the Yuga Dharma, which is distributed by Lord Chaitanya, Lord Krishna's incarnation in Kali Yuga. So the best method is Shravanam, Prabhupada mentions it, is Shravanam Kirtanam. Of the 9 paths of devotional service, the first 3 are the most important. Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam. These are the, and then of course, you know, Padasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atman, Nivedanam. The first 3 are the most important, because the first 3 lead to the others. You know, by hearing, Shravanam, Parikshit, achieved perfection. Simply by speaking, Kirtanam, Shukadev achieved perfection. Simply by remembering, Prahlad achieved perfection. By serving the lotus feet, Lakshmi Devi achieved perfection. Now the first three anybody can do. Not so many people are going to have the opportunity Padasevanam, you know, unless you're worshipping your deities like that. Archanam, that was Prithu achieved perfection by Archanam. Vandanam, Akura achieved perfection. Others also, like, others also achieve perfection by prayer. Gajendra Mokshana by prayer. So Vandanam, then comes Dasyam, Hanuman, he achieved perfection by that. And Sakyam is Arjuna himself. And then Atmanivedanam, Bali Maharaj. But of these nine, the most important are Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam. Because by engaging in Shravanam Kirtanam, then naturally there will be Vishnu Smaranam. So we are doing some Shravanam Kirtanam here, so we remember, but the essence has to come from chanting of the holy name. And that's true in any bone of authentic spiritual tradition. In Islam and Christianity, you know, the chanting of the name of God is the way. Just call on the name of the Lord and you will be free, says in the Bible. If you just call on the name of the Lord and you will be free. The holy name of God. So for us, we are focused on chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Because when, as is explained in different shastras, that as it also in this purport, that there is absolutely no difference between Krishna and his form, his pastimes, or his name. Krishna and his name are identical. There is absolutely no difference. There's absolutely no difference between the two. We may not be aware of it. We may not be perceiving the Krishna as in his nama rupa, but it is there. And by chanting, we get the effect. We don't have to be aware of the name to get the effect. Just like if you're in the hospital, you're sick, the doctor gives you an injection. You don't have to have a degree in biochemistry so that you understand how the medicine works. You just have to give you the injection, and after some time you get better. You don't have to understand how, you don't have to be perceiving the holy name, you don't have to have a big degree in theology about the theology of the holy name. All you have to do is chant the holy name. Chant the holy name rigidly according to a certain number of times, you know, per day. Because it is medicine. The doctor says you should take your tablets 3 times a day after meal. Similarly, you should chant a certain number of times the holy name every day, according to the prescription, and you will get the effect. Guaranteed. The effect is there. So we have to do that. It is the only way in the Kali Yuga to escape the bondage of material life. In the Vayu Purana, it explains that what was achieved in Kritta Yuga in 12 years by meditation, what is achieved in Treta Yuga by 6 years of Yajna, what is achieved in Dwarpa Yuga in 3 years of strict Archana, can be achieved in Kali Yuga in one day by chanting the holy name. That is the only benefit of the Kali Yuga, that is the holy name is there. The unfortunate thing is that we don't accept it. That is our misfortune. But if we do accept it, then we get all the benefit. And as Prabhupada explained in the purport, that Krishna is Satchitananda. So if you chant the holy name, then you're in that association. And so of the qualities of Krishna, Satchitananda. So we will begin to imbibe those qualities, because those are also our qualities. The nature of the soul is also Satchitananda. So by Krishna's association, we will begin to realize our own qualities. Like you stick an iron in a fire long enough, it becomes like fire. So then we will begin to understand our own eternal nature, Sat. And if we understand our own eternal nature, then many things become trivial. Many problems just become, this disappear, because we know we are eternal. We will begin to realize that we are eternal. So we are eternal, but problems are temporary. The problems are temporary, but we will still be here after the problems are long gone. All the students are worried about their exams, right? But you're not worried about exams, right? Because that's long past. But you used to be worried. But the exams have gone, but you're still here. Right? And that's for every problem. The problem will be gone, but you'll still be there. Because we're eternal, problems are not eternal. So that we begin to realize that by chanting the holy name. I had one landlady. She was in her 70s, and she was falling apart, literally falling apart, her body. She's trying to keep herself together, you know, makeup and things like that, but she was suffering because of the fact that, you know, the body deteriorates and she had so many diseases. But she was a very pious lady, so I was preaching to her just about the holy name and about the fact that we're not our body. So just the knowledge, just in theory, she felt so happy just to know I'm not this body. Because it, you know, but if you think you're your body, boy, you're gonna. If Aishwarya Rai thinks she's her body, she's gonna be a really unhappy person in about 20 years. The men are gonna be looking at her the way they are now. You know, it's gonna be completely pain. If you think you're your body, you are gonna be suffering like anything when you start getting old, isn't it? And then Krishna is also Chit, all knowledge. Sarvasya chaham hriday sanavishto matha smatir gyanam apovanam cha. I'm situated in the heart of all the living entities. From me comes knowledge, forgetfulness, and remembrance. So if Krishna, if you're continuously associating with Krishna by chanting his holy name, then knowledge will be there. Krishna, by controlling your mind with the holy name. Bhaktisiddhanta says you beat your mind in the morning with your shoes and you beat it in the evening with a broomstick, meaning the holy name. You chant. And then the mind is controlled. So what does Krishna say in the Gita? When the mind is controlled, the super soul is attained. Then Krishna will tell you what to do. He'll just be like Arjuna driving your chariot. He'll tell you you should turn this way, you should turn that way. So exactly, he'll give you, you'll hear, you'll be able to hear Krishna tell you what to do. And he will inspire you, he will give you so much inspiration. All the great artists, musicians, you know, like, what is his name? Mozart. He didn't sit down and think, well, which note should I put next? The whole piece just appeared in his mind. From beginning, he was writing it down. He didn't like have to think, well, this doesn't, you know, it just all came to him. Krishna inspired, because from previous karma, it all came to him. And so many, you know, scientists, mathematicians, like Richard Riemann, who was a famous German mathematician. He developed Riemann integrals, which was then used for tensor analysis, which Einstein then used to create the theory of relativity. So he was had a hard time. A big mental block came to him. He couldn't figure it out. So then he just decided to relax, went for a walk in the Alps, and then the whole thing just appeared in his mind. The super soul gave him the knowledge, because he had deserved it from some previous karma. Right? But devotees, I have my own personal experience, and other devotees have also had similar experiences, that, for example, the one that really came to light for me was in 1983. I was living in New Vrindavan, and I was trying to write the Vaishnav calendar program. I had very primitive computer equipment then, and I had to devise all the formulas by myself from scratch. And it was very frustrating. Sometimes I was on the verge of tears. I would have been pulling my hair if I had any hair. And I would just go to bed very frustrated. But I'd get up every morning at 2 o'clock in the morning, because I was worshipping the deity, and I would chant all my rounds. And the first time it happened, I was just chanting my rounds, and all of a sudden, all the formulas just appeared in my mind. I just wrote it down, and then from that point on, I always kept a notebook with me while I was chanting my japa, because I didn't want to be trying to remember the formulas when I was chanting. I just wanted to write them down so I can just focus on chanting. But it happened many times. Many times. Or some devotees I knew, they were running a big business. They had hundreds of employees, and they were only chanting 4 rounds a day. So I told them, you know, you should be chanting 16 rounds. You're initiated disciples. You got a chance. They said, oh, no, we haven't got time. We haven't got time to chant. They gave so many regular excuses, you know. So anyway, I was more obstinate than they were, and I just finally pushed them to chant 16 rounds a day. And then later they told me, now we have more time than we had before, because we become more efficient. Somehow they get inspired with more ideas and run things more efficiently. Now they have more time than they ever had before, simply because Krishna in the heart inspires them what they should do. And of course, Krishna is Ananda. So if we become chant sufficiently, then like we'll be like Rupa Goswami, who he said he wished that he had millions of mouths by which he could utter the name Krishna. There's two syllables. Krishna contains so much nectar. He wished he had millions of ears so that he could hear them all. Of course, that's a very elevated position, but still in our glimmering start of Krishna consciousness, many devotees, you know, they've had experiences like some very sweet kirtan, when the heart begins to break hearing the sound of the holy name. Otherwise we wouldn't continue chanting. Everybody's had that experience. Krishna gives a little hint of what it's like, you know. He gives a little drop of what that ocean of the holy name is like. You get to experience that. So I got the single time. So anybody has any questions or comment, or discussion? Nrisinga Swami? I'll tell you one thing before I end. Frank Moore thing, that at the time of death, the holy name is going to be your only friend. And don't forget that. He's going to be your only friend. When you're lying there in pain and in great distress, the holy name is going to be your only friend. So you better practice now, because it's going to be very difficult. It will be very difficult. I can assure you, it will be difficult. I have direct.
It's interesting to hear about Ashwatthama yesterday.
What's that?
Ashwatthama. Maybe the next
yesterday.
Yeah.
It was interesting because I'm not ready to do that.
That's in the Puranas. It's in the Puranas. Because he's still alive.
In which Purana it is?
I first read it. It's in the, if you read in the Puranic Encyclopedia, it explains about Ashwatthama, that he will be the next Vyasadeva, because he's a Chiranjiva. Because he was, they didn't, though they were going to kill Ashwatthama, because he is a Brahmin, though he fell, he's not supposed to kill a Brahmin no matter what they do. So they just killed him, sort of, by, you know, cutting off some locks of hair. But it's described in the Puranas that he will be, you know, I have to look it up in the Puranic Encyclopedia. He will be next Vyasadeva. Because in different, you know, Mandantar things, do, everything repeats over and over again. There's nothing new, really. Anything else? No. All right then. Bhagavad Gita Granth Raj Ki Jai. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Ho.